Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to sit down with my new friend, Gustavo Gonzalez, more commonly known as Goose, the owner and operator of Gooseworks Screen Printing Studio right here in Houston. Gooseworks is an all-in-one shop for designing, ordering, and printing high-quality custom apparel and merchandise for small businesses, nonprofits, musicians, and artists alike. Goose started printing shirts over 8 years ago on an ironing board in his apartment and now leases out a huge space in Garden Oaks where he produces high-quality custom work. I've been working on putting together some limited edition merch drops for Houston Made, and Goose is going to be the one that gets it done. He and I share a lot of mutual friends. We've been working on finding a time to sit down together for a while, and we finally made it happen. So listen in as Goose and I discuss how he stumbled into screen printing after getting fired as a waiter, whether or not he considers himself an artist, and how he's handled criticism along the way. Gustavo Gonzalez, or Goose, as friends would call you, of Gooseworks Printing. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for doing this, man. I know it was a little bit of a runaround for us to get coordinated and get this thing scheduled, but yes. I am so grateful to get to be here with you and get to be in your studio, right?
Welcome.
Man. So tell me a little bit about Gooseworks for those people who don't know what you're doing here.
Yeah, so I started Gooseworks Screen Printing Studio. We opened a little over 2 years ago, and the first year in business was, you know, COVID hit, so that was interesting. And but what we do here is we design and screen print t-shirts, some, you know, apparel for anyone, really. There's really not anyone that we're not going to work with. However, we have noticed that a good niche for us has become breweries, mm-hmm. Restaurants, bars, and it goes from there to, you know, lawyers and schools.
Yeah, a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
Anybody who needs a shirt or design work.
If you need
work,
a t-shirt, yes. Yeah. We'll design it for you, give you some input as to, you know, the best garment for, you know, for your design, depending mm-hmm. on the use. And, you know, we're not just going to hit the print button and like, yeah, here's your order. But no.
Yeah.
We like to get to know who we're working with. Yeah. And, you know, just add a little more value to the product.
Yeah. I think the way I would describe you is a local, obviously, mm-hmm. but a local custom, hands-on designer and printer for apparel, swag, merchandise, whatever you need. Like, you can kind of do it all, but focusing a lot on t-shirts, because that seems like where it's got your t-shirts and apparel is where you kind of got your start.
Yes. And as you know, we get busier and busier, it's getting a little bit trickier to take care of other things like that.
Okay, you say 2 years, but I did some stalking, right? As I'm wont to do. And in March of 2013, so that's over 8 years ago,
okay,
you posted a picture of, I think, one of your first screen prints. And the caption said, "Can't find shirts I like. I'll design them myself." So you say two years ago, but was that really the birth of Gooseworks, or was that?
That's good. I like that. So Gooseworks, the brand, I guess you could call it, it started around then. In like 2013.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, I taught myself how to screen print because, yeah, I couldn't find shirts that I liked, and I had an idea for something or other. And I've also always really enjoyed the graphic arts and, you know, different kinds of media. So very hands-on stuff, sculpting, you know, watercolor painting, whatever, drawing.
Spray paint, stencil work.
I did mess around a little bit, you know. I gave it a shot, my Banksy esque face. It didn't go very well, but you know, I had fun with it and whatever, you know. I just wanted to see if I could do it, mm-hmm. and I would try things. And then the same thing happened with screen printing. I was like, you know, I'll see what all it takes. And yeah, I taught myself how to do it in my apartment. And I wasn't working at a print shop at the time. That was just something that, you know, I started
one of your many like endeavors just to be like, I'll try my hand at this and see if I like it, see if I'm good at it.
So I had that, you know, overpriced contraption that I bought at Texas Art Supply, and then I set it up on my ironing board at the apartment, and I was curing t-shirts with an iron and a sheet of paper. It looked like a crazy laboratory in my apartment for a while. Yeah, from there, I lost the job that I had at the time, which I was a waiter, and I was absolutely miserable.
As a waiter or yes, after as a you waiter. Left the job?
Oh,
okay.
As a waiter. No. When I got fired, it was actually... Oh, because I did get fired. It was a corporate restaurant. And I got secret shopped.
So someone came in, like working for corporate.
And because it's Landry's restaurant. And, you know, they do that every so often. And at the time,
that's crazy.
The review said, you know, he did a great job, but he just didn't hit the notes that I was supposed to hit, like upsell and this and that.
Oh, my gosh.
To my defense, I didn't have the time because I got triple sat with a 7-top and then like a family of 4 that I had to translate stuff for, and then the secret shoppers. So, you know, they said I did everything right, whatever, but they had to let me go. I was worried, but at the same time, I just felt this huge relief. You know, to me at the time, being a waiter, it was just not.
I'd been there, man. For sure. I had a job as a barista, and I'd worked. That was kind of like my default job when I needed a job, is I'd worked at multiple coffee shops. You just go in. And the last coffee shop that I worked at, I watched the entire, like the whole, entire show, like of The Office, start to finish on shift.
Yeah.
In a matter of a month.
Dang.
like that's how little I was like, I just how bored I was. And that kind of boredom made me miserable.
Yeah.
And so I was so ready to go.
And no disrespect to anybody who's a server, you know, or works in that industry. It just wasn't for me. And I knew, you know, my options were kind of limited at the time. And I just, you know, I knew that it wasn't for me. I wanted to do something more along the lines of this, but I felt stuck a little bit, and you know, I got fired, and I was like, okay, well, now I gotta make something work. So for a while, I paid the bills doing commissioned artwork, paintings, and stuff like that, a little small t-shirt runs for a couple bars and bands and stuff.
Yeah.
And then eventually the funds ran out. I was like, all right, now I need to do something seriously. So I got a job at another screen printing shop, and I was there for 5-6 years, learned a lot. And 2.5 years ago, I was like, you know, I think it just feels right.
Yeah.
It makes sense to go on my own. And that's when Gooseworks Screen Printing Studio, to answer your question, because I tend to just, you know, wander off.
That's fine. That's the good stuff right there.
we came back to it. Good. But yeah, to answer your question, that's when Gooseworks Screen Printing Studio was born 2.5 years ago. But Gooseworks, the brand.
Yeah, long time ago. Because I saw some of that early stuff. You talk about connecting with the musicians, the bars. It seems like you got a kind of a good little push getting to do stuff for the Dirty Verbs. So like a local funk band, right? Like they were like doing their thing.
Yeah.
And so I like when I'm looking through kind of the archives of Gooseworks, I see like some posters, shirts.
Yeah.
Like you were doing like kind of a lot of stuff for them. Were they paying you, or was it just like,
I forgot about
that. Was it free concert tickets or drinks at the bar?
I mean, were they paying me? I think,
maybe a little.
I think they did. A little. But it was also, you know, at the time you kind of have to do stuff to get your name out there. Uh-huh. And, you know, I was good friends with them, so I was also happy to help.
You get to be a part of the thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed the music. And, you know, I did a few poster designs, which I guess eventually led me to work with other people like the Suffers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to work with them. I designed their first poster for their debut album.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's cool because they're only going to have one debut album. Mm-hmm. And I got to be a part of that. And I also designed a t-shirt for them. And I became really, really close with those guys. They're great. Still talk to them.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that they're doing well.
Does it feel like one of those was like was it whether it's Suffers or the Dirty Verbs, was there one of those like little gigs that you were like, oh no, like this could be a thing, like that you felt like it was bigger than just a thing you were doing on the side?
I don't really like to stop and think like how big this can actually be or what it can become, because if you do that, sometimes you're just going to overanalyze it and it's never going to be perfect.
So one day at a time, you're not so much dreaming about the big future, or even back then weren't dreaming of this.
Well, no, because I mean, yeah, it was the dream to have my own space, but I wasn't like, okay, this is going to make it happen. You know what I mean? Because I feel like if you approach it that way, it can turn out differently. If that makes sense.
So you were always trying to hold it loosely.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. But when I got that gig with the Suffers, I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, it's got potential, and you know, I know the exposure is going to be great and good to meet those guys. And
at some point you went from, you know, these little runs that you've done on your iron with the contraption and all of that. Obviously you get this job at the shop, so you're starting to see like more of the mechanics of it and the business side of it.
Right.
Was there a moment where like, or what was the moment when you were like, oh no, I'm going to do this. Like I can do this and I can do it on my own.
I had been at that other shop for 5 years or so, and not a lot had changed. Yes, I've learned a lot, but I was already married, so I just had to look at a bigger picture. And then I thought, okay, in 5 years, if I stay here, will things be any better? And the answer was no. And then by then, I was pretty much just, you know, doing everything that needed to be done. Obviously not. Once you open a business, there's a lot more that actually goes into it. But, you know, all the whole process.
Of creating shirts and getting orders out.
Customer service, artwork, you know, pre-production, everything. I already knew how to do it. And I actually ran it on my own like that for, I mean, I only hired my first full-time employee actually a year ago. But before then, it was just me doing everything, answering emails, washing out screens, doing the artwork, ordering stuff, and like I was running around. I've aged 10 years in the last 2 years.
and
it's a lot of work.
What was some of the business side of stuff that you didn't anticipate, right? So you knew how to do all this stuff kind of in the shop, but now you've got your office over here. Was it legal stuff?
It's always taxes stuff. And you know, all that boring stuff.
But then you have to know it, right?
Yeah,
like you get into it and you're like, oh man.
Yeah, and you know, that stuff kind of scared me opening up the business, like, how am I going to figure it out or whatever. But, you know, then you think about, well, I figured out every other thing about the process that, you know, when it's time to learn something, I will have to learn it.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
You cross the bridge when you get there.
Exactly.
And it sucks when you don't know, and then you have to get into it.
You got to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely feel the same way. And I was telling you even about this podcast, like I'm not an audio engineer.
Yeah.
Like, I knew I wanted to interview people. I knew I wanted to sit down with some microphones and it not sound like hot garbage. And just week after week, I just like be like, all right, well, we'll figure that out now.
Yeah, you can't freeze just because you don't know something or because you might be afraid of it or whatever. You just take a deep breath, take a step back and be like, all right, what do I need to make it work? And
It seems like you've had a lot of really great support around you from the very beginning, and both family and other people in the business, right? Like how Trendsetters was like one of your like OG supporters from the very beginning. I mean, where did those relationships come from? Is it just made friends along the way?
Eric from Trendsetters was the first person to ever carry one of my t-shirts as consignment. And he was super cool. He said, hey man, I'm not gonna take, you know, a profit. I just really like your stuff. I won't put it out there. And it was the bike, the City of Houston with the bike design on it, which is still going pretty strong. People that, you know, see it for the first time, they really like it.
Yeah.
And yeah, he, I don't know, I guess you'd have to ask him what made him, you know, reach out and want to help out. But yeah, he's been super cool. He's keeps sending people my way he's definitely good.
Yeah. That Houston design with the bike and all of that, that has seemed to have been kind of a turning point as well in your business. I mean, someone's got that tattooed on their body.
Yes.
Which is insane. So, yes. I mean, what you came up with that and you threw it out there and it just has kind of had this taken its life of its own.
Yeah. And it goes back to saying, you know, like if you sit there and think like how big something can get, you kind of like, you know, you just got to put it out there and let it become a thing on its own. And I did that because at the time I was riding bikes a lot. I was doing critical mass and all that. And that, when I came up with that, it sort of encapsulated the whole, you know, passion or craze that everybody had for, you know, just riding bikes around the city. And it's crazy how people still look for it and how somebody got it tattooed on their arm.
I can appreciate your perspective in that you're like, you don't know how big this is going to be. And I'm sure when you create things, you kind of hope that people will like them. But again, you're not saying like, oh, this t-shirt's going to get me on the news multiple times. But,
that, you know, that's not really the goal. Like, oh, I'll sell it out or whatever. Because, you know, I've done things that without expecting it, they take off like crazy. And then some that don't. You know, but you can't take that personally or, you know, just sit there and be like, oh, it's a failure. This is going to ruin me. You learn what works, what doesn't. At least you put something out there and on to the next one.
Do you like feel like you're an artist? Would you consider yourself an artist? Because you're saying you were doing commissioned art pieces for a while, but are you more or less comfortable with that title now, like these years later?
I mean, artist, graphic designer.
Yeah.
Is that the same as an artist?
I mean, I think the definition of art is definitely up for debate, but I'm fascinated on like your take on it, because I wonder if some of that hesitancy to say, oh yeah, this is going to be the big thing is because maybe you're coming from it with as an artist and you're saying, no, I'm making this because I believe it's good and I believe it's true and I want to make something that is meaningful or something that's creative or interesting. And so because of that, just not wired to look at it of being like, I'm going to make $10,000 with this or whatever. Because I definitely make stuff being like, how big can this get? I bet it could get real big. And it doesn't often get that big.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of a eternal optimist. So if something doesn't hit as big as I thought, I go, okay, cool. The next thing. I'll try the next thing. But I constantly dream about where this show will take me, where real estate will take me, where my media company will take me. It's it's what absolutely drives me. But I wonder, like, if it's the art piece of it. Because I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily creating art with this show.
I mean, like you said, it's up for debate. So people, you know, buy a t-shirt that says Finish 290 and they think, oh, this is, you know, like an absolute expression of its time. This is art.
But you're not sold on that as title as yourself.
You know, I play with graphics, play with colors and put it together. And
I wonder if that's what Picasso said. If he was like, I don't know, I play with colors and I play with shapes and I scribble on napkins. I mean, they're Picasso napkins that are worth a lot of money.
Just for the record, I am not being compared to Picasso right now.
you might not compare yourself to Picasso, but there's some similarities that I think that could be drawn. Yeah. I think that this is a medium. I think this is the debate. We'll have it now. I just think that graphic design specifically for t-shirts is a medium. I mean, I'm wearing a designed shirt that I bought. Mm-hmm. It's a limited edition merch drop from a creator that I really like. Mm-hmm. And it means something to me. And people would say fashion is art, and this is fashion in a way.
Yeah. I guess it would depend on the job.
Behind you, you're in your studio, you're sitting on a couch. Mm-hmm. On the wall behind you, you have four of your most noteworthy designs in the last 8+ years that you've got. One of them is your logo, the Finish 290, the Houston /Enron type Crooked logo,
H,
and then like Nintendo 64 Houston logo. So each of those you did for you. or right. you did for the brand, this brand.
Yeah.
And so maybe those feel a little bit closer to art than, you know, Joe Schmo's welding.
For the sake of the argument, let's say that. So that design, the Texican flag, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I married the folk art mm-hmm. that is the Sarape mm-hmm. design. And I married it with the Texas flag to celebrate Mexican culture mm. in Texas. To me, I guess that is more artistic than some of the other things that I've done. Does that answer your question?
Sure. I think that it's in you. I think that mm-hmm. you have an artist streak in you at the very least. And maybe mm-hmm. some people would say the same about me. Maybe because, yeah, I'm making things and I really like making things with the videos and the podcast. I'm creating these little moments. Yeah. And I would argue that, yeah, conversation is an art form. So mm-hmm. maybe the thing that I'm, when I look at the audio file, I don't look at the audio file as art, but I do look at my ability to draw something out of you in a story or whatever. That can be art yeah. in a way.
You've hit some points that I wasn't, you know, expecting.
Yeah.
Already.
But I think that you do. I think that you're creating art here, and absolutely there can be maybe cheap art, you know, but that doesn't necessarily make it any less iconic or shaping or whatever. I mean, think about how big the smiley face, the original smiley face, yellow, little
simple.
But that thing, at least when we were growing up, mm-hmm. late 90s, early 2000s, that thing was everywhere.
Yeah.
On everything. So yeah, I think you're an artist.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, man. Let's go back to the timeline. You did have a pop-up, your first pop-up, February 2015.
Is that Liberty Station?
I don't know where it was, but I just know it says, got to start somewhere. Tomorrow never knows. And this tomorrow never knows thing.
That was so cheesy.
I'm really interested though, because it still feels like you're hung up on this, like the future. Even back then you had a loose relationship with, who knows what tomorrow is. So we'll do this today.
You got to put stuff out there. You got to, whenever an idea hits you, you just run with it, mm-hmm. you put it out and kind of just like fish out for it. Not be afraid of putting it out there and mm-hmm. let it take on a life of its own, or let it be open to criticism. Cause you'd be amazed at how people are willing to go out of their way just to criticize what you're doing.
What does that criticism look like? I mean, is it people hating on the designs or giving you shit about
Yeah,
the
now
business?
It's hilarious. And well, even at the time, this dude like even went as far as take the mock-up that I had posted and Photoshopped it on top of Windows 98 software paint. And put, oh, look at me. I can sell shirts and take your money by coming up with this, you know, crappy design. And then it was just hilarious. But
it's so many extra levels of being a hater. Yeah. Like, it's one thing to leave a snarky comment, but he opened up some kind of software.
He opened up a different bag of monkeys just to, like, go that far and hate on what I was doing. And it was hilarious.
Did it sting at all? I mean, like, you're able to brush it off now. At the time, were you a little flustered by it?
For a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know what? People are always going to have their opinion. Everyone's suddenly an expert on everything. So it's just like, you know what?
Well, and you know the work that you've put in. You know, like, that a design may seem simplistic, but the process of getting it on a shirt, doing mm-hmm. it properly, getting it where it lasts and all of that. Like, there's so many other layers to it of like, yeah, sure. Maybe again, it could be the smiley face, but there's all kinds of other things that go into creating a successful business around all of this.
Yeah. I couldn't get so hung up on it just because, you know, a lot of times when people are hating on what you do or criticizing or whatever, it's got nothing to do with you and everything to do with them. So it's just like, cool, man. What else you got? The fact that you took that long.
Yeah. I hope you're having a good day. Whatever's going on in your life for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you talk about the support that people have shown you. I mean, it feels like I've seen this to be true, that Houston is this really, oh gosh, collaborative city. Yes. It's a really communal city. It is crazy how big and small that the city is at the same time. I mean, I had an event last week where I was moderating this panel for a local trust company. Really, really cool event. I was super excited to do it. And it was a whole professional thing. They had a live stream and they had multiple like sound technicians. And so I'm back there getting mic'd up by one of the sound technicians. And
yeah.
I tend to make conversation with whoever I'm with. So she's getting this lav on me and I've got this big name tag with my name on it. It says Rusty Gates. And so I'm just chit-chatting. Oh, hey, you know, is this your company? How long have you been doing this? How long have you been sound technician? And she was telling me about that. And she goes, yeah, Rusty Gates. You know, I have some really good friends who they know a Rusty Gates who's a realtor. It's like, well, I'm actually also a realtor. And
guess what?
And my name is Rusty Gates. I don't know how many more of us are out there.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh, well, do you know this couple? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I do. Like, yeah, they're good friends. And so then I took a selfie with her and sent it to my friend and was like, hey, yeah, met Elise. And that felt indicative of Houston.
Okay. Right?
That it's this massive city.
Yes.
One of the biggest cities, but then everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
And it's super collaborative and super supportive.
It's a super tight community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how have you felt that? I mean, obviously you're supporting small businesses. You mean you're helping them get their brand out there, but also you have the experience of having people like trendsetters like support you. I mean, so like you were born in Juarez, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like so, and you didn't come here till you were 13, right? Somewhere around there. Or somewhere around there. And
eighth
then
grade.
Houston.
What is that?
I
11.
13, 11, 13, somewhere around there.
whatever
yeah.
Eighth grade is.
But so early-ish. Yeah. But, I mean, what has your experience been of Houston? Like, did you always love Houston, or has it grown on you?
Well, yeah, definitely. There's a sense of community here that I haven't seen anywhere else. Mm-hmm. People are always willing to help out each other. Not even people from Houston. You know, when something happens in New Orleans, we're always mm-hmm. helping out, helping neighbors out. So yeah, Houston's got this different charm about it that I don't think a lot of other cities have. And which is, you know, for a massive city to be so close, you know, with its own community and all the diversity
yeah.
that still works together is a great thing to see. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, whenever there's an opportunity to connect someone with someone else, on a professional or personal level, happy to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be interested. How has Houston changed in your time here? Cause I've only been here since 2014. And even in that time, I feel like it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
But what was Houston like when you were growing up? Have you seen those shifts?
Well, I grew up in the Cypress area. And then I ended up moving to Washington Avenue and like the Arts District. And that whole shift was massive for me because, you know, I didn't really know that it was there and all the art festivals, all the concerts and all that stuff. So seeing that side of Houston was just, you know, super eye opening.
Right? Yeah. That's a really noteworthy point is Houston's really interesting. I mean, I think that a lot of the strength of Houston is the diversity. I think a lot of the diversity comes from the fact that there are no zoning laws, that you can kind of build anything. I mean, even just up and down Pinemont where shop is located.
Yeah, you got houses.
You have houses, industrial complex, shopping center. Like it's just pop, 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 pop.
Yep.
You know, private school, $400,000 new builds.
Yes.
Like it is
the size of this freaking couch.
Yeah. It is it is incredibly diverse, and they've said that that's a big part of the strength of why Houston didn't suffer as much during the housing like recession after 2008. We were a little more protected in our economy just because of that. It wasn't pure suburbia all the way out. But one of the things that I've seen change in those 14 years is that some of that kind of culture and the cool areas of Houston has finally started to spread like outside of the inner loop mm-hmm. is that, you know, whenever I moved here, I was talking with somebody who lived out in Fairfield their whole life. And I was like, hey, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you go in town? Like, you know, what are the cool spots? And like, we don't go into town. Why would we go into town? We live in Fairfield. We live like a middle of like basically Austin.
Yeah.
And, And when I moved out here, I moved from Denver, which was very much like this. It was, you know, little microbreweries on every corner and art shops here and there. Just really cool stuff. Entrepreneurs doing stuff. Then moved out to the burbs and was like, the only coffee shop around is Starbucks. Or, you know, I can drive 20 miles into town and go to Boomtown. And that was, like, felt like even then it was my only option.
Boomtown.
Yeah, well, and Boomtown's like this OG coffee shop that, now you have a dozen coffee shops within 2 miles of Boomtown, which that wasn't true. You had that little 19th Street, 21st Street. But you've now not only seen so many more of those things open up here, the entrepreneurial culture has really taken, right? It used to be oil and gas, but now it feels more and more of the entrepreneur stuff. And then that stuff is now breaking out into the burbs, where I have not one but two microbreweries.
Yes,
I don't know. I'm not saying that that's the metric of what like cool culture is. I'm just saying that for my demographic, it's something that I value. And finally, like I don't like it's not just Carbach or St. Arnold that I've got two different microbreweries within a couple of miles of my house, and that's like such a big deal.
It's growing.
So it is. It is cool. Community
is making it happen.
Yeah. That. The shift of there are these little pockets of everywhere, and or there's all these little pockets everywhere out even in the burbs of culture and creativity and people making stuff happen, which I don't know, man. I just love that. Looking forward to the future, tentatively holding it loosely. I mean, what's on the horizon for Gooseworks? More of this?
I would like to first having to open up shop, having the business established, getting it going, and then build momentum, and then actually building a solid clientele. That was the first goal of the, 3 years, I guess you could say. And then in the next 5 or 6, I would like to have my own space.
Like your own commercial space.
Yes,
like
my own commercial
You're leasing
space.
This space in this little center.
Yes. Yep. It is perfect for what we have now, but I do feel if things keep going the way that they have been, we're going to outgrow it. So yeah, my own commercial space, maybe a bigger press that will allow us to handle more technical jobs, and then build a bigger team and just, you know, see where we end up.
Yeah. I'm fascinated. I took this test as a part of graduate school. They measured all kinds of things. The test was called the Berkman, and it was this ridiculously long test. And there's only one thing that I actually remember about it is one of the things that it measured was why people work, like their motivations. And it was a spectrum, and on one end of the spectrum was somebody who works at a factory for 40 years doing the same job, putting the same nut on the same bolt for 40 years, right?
Yep.
Because at the end of the day, they get to take home their paycheck and they go home and they provide for their family.
Yes.
They're fed, they're taken care
of.
And
that's that.
They do their life and that's it. And they just, you know, do that until they either retire or they die or whatever. And that it's just you work a job because it gives you what you need.
Right.
And then the example on the other end was somebody who lives in a van on the side of a mountain and paints paintings of sunsets because they like painting paintings of sunsets. And they only go into town to begrudgingly sell their product
just so
they can get enough art supplies to go back up onto the mountain and keep painting sunsets.
Okay. Bob Ross.
And, and when I tested, I think I tested with 7 other people, there were 8 of us. All 7 were overall like really close to the factory side.
Oh,
like
really?
They did their work because that's what they were supposed to do and because it provided for them.
Were you painting sunsets?
I was painting sunsets.
Awesome.
And that made sense to me of like, this is maybe the most millennial thing that I'll ever say on this podcast, but like, I don't want to do work that I don't want to do. And that's not to say that that I love every element of this podcast or that I love every element of real estate or that I love every element of making videos. No, there is parts of that that I dislike. And maybe that's the going to town to sell the paintings so that I can get more art supplies. But I have worked hard over the last decade to build a life where I get to do more of the things that I want to do.
Good.
And less of the things I don't want to do. Where do you feel like you are on that spectrum?
Oh, man, I feel ridiculously lucky that I get to do what I do.
Yeah.
Just because it's in screen printing, I feel like I found the perfect balance of graphic arts and like hands-on and meeting new people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I almost feel guilty about how much I love it. You know, like, yeah, I'm definitely painting sunsets in here. Yeah, it still amazes me that I'm getting away with it, coming to work here and yeah. doing what I do and meeting cool people. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, you mentioned like the graphic side of things. I mean, there are people who are just graphic designers, mm-hmm. and that's all they do for work. And they live. I mean, they can do it from home, and they work with big brands, and they do all of that.
Yeah.
How is the screen printing different or special compared to just doing graphic design for people?
Because, you know, it's tangible. You get mm-hmm. to put it on something, put it on a t-shirt. That t-shirt goes out there. People love it and they keep wearing it. Something about it, like seeing it on the screen and then actually, you know, the physical aspect of it, of putting it on the, lining it up on the press, loading the ink. It's way more satisfying than just on the screen.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
For sure.
Yeah.
I think that's the artist in you. I do.
Yeah.
I think okay, it's the cool. artist, I think, of having a tangible thing that you want to.
Yeah, you just got to, like, you know what I mean?
Hold it.
Yeah.
And seeing your art. Because I saw one of your quote unquote Banksy things that I really liked, which was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with the ooze and the yes. turtle stencils. I thought that was fantastic.
Yes.
And I do think that there is something to be said for art being out there and not just on these black mirrors that we're carrying around.
I think, right? I don't know. Yeah, it's not the same. You can kind of tell when somebody comes up with artwork. You can almost tell when they've only ever worked in digital format.
Mm-hmm.
Versus hand-drawn or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Not to say there's anything wrong with it. Yeah. It's just like, you know, it's your tools.
There's a little tell, yeah.
You know, makes a better use of your time. That's cool. But, you know, you can kind of pick it out.
Yeah.
And when it's born out of a sketch, like, you know, pen and paper,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you get a different finished product.
That's sweet, man.
And just, yeah. Does that make sense?
And it does make sense. I think I get you. I think that in this... I have a Polaroid type style camera yes. with me that I just bought a couple weeks ago.
I have one too. I love it.
And I'm going to get a real Polaroid because these are small. And I mm-hmm. I chose this one over a bit. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Point being is that I've got it and I'm wanting to go more and more analog because I'm not a graphic designer.
Okay.
And I've had to design a lot of graphics specifically for this podcast.
Okay.
Right? Like the new episode releases. And I've got some little patterns. And I'm like, okay, these aren't looking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But now that everybody has Canva and yeah. can throw together this like polished little graphic,
yeah,
like, it makes me so angry. Like I part of it is because I'm not as good at it. So that's my own admission and my own insecurity. But the other thing is that because everybody else can do it,
yeah,
it's like, well, I don't want to get good at this thing that everybody can do. Like, I want to get good at something that very few people are doing. So I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to go yeah. analog and be like, I'm going to get really good at using this analog, you know, Polaroid style camera. And I don't know if there's something about that that resonates with what you're saying of the, like, starting with the hand drawn. But I think that we all have these cameras. And of course, there's so much great software and I use it. And I love it.
Yeah.
But also, how can we marry those things with tangible skill-based
yeah.
Elements of art?
You know, you just got to make it your own. You got to make it work for you and then not think too much about how someone else is doing it. Mm. Just, you know, when you do something, you should always make it to where it impresses you first.
Mm.
And then you know, if it works, you know, the stuff that I have out here is because I put it together. And I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. You know, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I feel like it's good enough to become whatever, you know, and like I said, sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't, but at the end of the day, I've always liked it. And then, you know, that's not to say, going back to the graphic design stuff, you know, picking up Canva or whatever, that it's not a valid, you know, platform or whatever. But if you make it work for you and you somehow find a style that kind of separates you from others, then yeah, you've done it.
I like your own. I think it's a good encouragement.
Yeah.
Because I was about to swear off Canva.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm done with
I've
this
never
crap.
Worked with it, so I don't
well,
know.
Well, and it's super easy to use, yeah. And you can do a lot with it, and the tools are getting better. But mm-hmm. I was just listening to this interview with Chris Doe. You know Chris Doe? He's really big in the marketing world and mm-hmm. graphic design, print, typeface, stuff like that. Okay. I mean, it's huge. He's a big name, does a lot of YouTube stuff. Instagram, he's everywhere. Mm-hmm. But people were asking, you know, with all this AI, all these AI advances in design, you know, where all this computer learning that has come from things like those little things on websites where it's like, click all of the buses, like, or click all the images with a bus or whatever.
Yeah.
That's actually training AI to identify what buses look like. But now there is software essentially where it has gotten to the point you can say, give me a spaceship that looks like an ice cream cone.
No.
Yeah. And it'll just go boom. Like, we think that the AI will decide, yeah, this is what a spaceship looks like. This is what an ice cream cone. We'll just marry it. And the debate was, this is going to rob, like,
it's the beginning of the end.
Yeah. It's rob artistry of, well, because if anybody can just say, you know, paint the Mona Lisa or whatever, then where's the artistry in it? And his argument was that it can never rob your agency to say, well, sure, of course it can make a spaceship ice cream cone.
Yeah.
But you can say, you know, make it more pink, make it longer, make it taller, make it more fire, make it, you know, more industrial. And it will actually know how to interpret all those terms, but you'll still be in charge. In the same way that, you know, I can take my iPhone and take a picture of you and I can blur the background in all of 10 seconds or maybe less, like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, photographers, it was either you got the shot or you're going to like go in and like hand paint, or I don't even know what the process would be for editing that kind of photo in that way.
Right.
15 years ago.
Right.
And so it's a good point to say, like, hey, even if the tool works for you, just get in there and keep using it until you find your own voice and find your own style. And
yeah, that's the thing, you know, just make it your own. Even if that AI that you're talking about, if you just make it say whatever you need, it'll always be missing something if you don't actually just go in there and, you know what I mean?
Do something to tweak it.
Yeah.
We'll see, man.
Yeah, it sounds like a scary...
the future we're in, man.
Yeah, it's like when Guitar Hero came out and everybody thought they were a guitar player.
That's true. But there are also, like, people who could do that game better than anybody else.
That's true.
I don't know. Well, man, what did... any advice that you would offer to, 2013 Goose that just getting started out, saying, I'm going to make shirts that I like? Any advice that you'd give the younger version of yourself?
Dang, that's a good question. Just keep going. Don't be scared of the unknown or worry too much about, oh my God, how am I going to figure this out? What's going to happen whenever, if this happens? You know, just keep an open mind, be smart, and do things with a good intent, and you're where you're meant to be.
I think it's really good advice.
Did it even make sense?
I think so. It is absolutely easy to get paralyzed, and I've been there. I am there semi-regularly, a place that I've just like, well, I'm going to go watch, you know, the newsroom on HBO for 3 hours because I'm not going to deal with this problem. And I have to learn to get past that and take the next step forward. And people have been very kind about me and what I do. And, you know, I posted a picture of the trust company event, and standing next to like billionaires, and people are like, oh my gosh, man, like, you do so many like amazing things. And I was like, man, I was like, dude, I'm just like making it up. Like, I'm just doing like the next thing that avails itself to me.
Yeah.
And, it's terrifying at times.
Yeah, but you got to take advantage of the opportunities.
Yeah, take advantage of the opportunities.
And if not, somebody else will.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, the sunrise thing. Like, I just like, well, there's a sunrise. Like, what am I going to do? Not paint it?
Yeah.
Like, this opportunity's here. I gotta jump on it. And worst case scenario, like, it bombs or it sucks or it doesn't turn out well. And my perspective is, well, there'll be another sunrise tomorrow.
Yeah. Happy accidents. No mistakes.
Goose, thanks so much for joining me, for sharing a little bit about your journey. And
oh man, thanks for hearing me yapping about.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll push some people your way and have people come check you out here.
Appreciate it.
Goose Works.
Thank you. Thanks, man.
A huge thank you to Goose and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. Despite what he said, Goose is an artist, and he's created some really cool pieces that you can wear right out of his shop. And if you haven't done so already, go find him on Instagram, at GooseWorks. One of the things that he'll do from time to time is these free print days where you can bring in your own shirt and have it printed with a custom design of his making, and it is absolutely worth the follow. Otherwise, if you're a small business owner or musician or just someone who needs some shirts made, go check him out. I've personally compared his prices, and he beat everyone out that I looked at, and he does great work. If this is your first time listening to Houston Made, I definitely recommend that you go check out some of our other episodes with guests from all kinds of industries, ranging from compost delivery services to one-wheel rentals, restaurant owners, to balloon artists. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I'd love to connect, hear your thoughts about what we're doing here. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.